Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, listeners. This is the Hashtag Am Writing Podcast, the place where we help you play big in your writing life, love the process, and finish what matters. I am KJ Dell'Antonia, and today I am bringing to you an interview with Rachel Herron. I just finished talking to Rachel, and I really enjoyed this. We talked about vulnerability. We talked about the challenges of writing the book of your heart. We talked about what should show you where that book is, the idea that the fear is where you should play. It's a really great interview, and I know that you are going to enjoy it. Let me tell you a little bit about Rachel. She is the author of so many books, thrillers and romances, and most recently in the book that we are talking about, The Seven Miracles of Beatrix Holland. And I have to read you, Rachel's going to describe this to you, but I got to read you the very short thing that basically made me say, take my money. And it went like this. A psychic tells Beatrix Holland that she'll experience seven miracles and then she'll die. No problem, though. Beatrix isn't worried. She is, above all things, pragmatic. She vastly prefers a spreadsheet to a tall tale. Then the miracles start to happen. It's a really great book, and more importantly, it's a big book. It is a book where Rachel is writing what comes from deep inside, and it is a book that only Rachel could write, and that is why I asked Rachel to join me today. I hope that you enjoy this interview, and before I release you to it, I just want to remind you that the place to go to talk more about writing big and playing big in your writing life is anywhere that we are. The Am Writing Podcast, hashtag Am Writing, amwritingpodcast.com. Find us on Substack. Find us by Googling. Grab those show notes. You should be getting them. And join us for all the different ways that we need to come together in a community to give each other the strength to do our very best and biggest work. So I'm going to ask you to describe the Seven Miracles of Beatrix Holland to me. But also, before I even do, I want to say how much I enjoyed it. And also, so we have been spending most of our time on the Am Writing Podcast lately talking about writing big and striving big and trying to do something different and bigger and better than what you have done before. I think as writers, we're always trying to up our game, but there's upping your game and there's reaching for the stars. And I felt like this book reached for the stars in a way that you maybe didn't even set out to, because to me, as someone who has read much of your work and followed your career and listened to a lot of the Ink in Your Veins podcast and sort of just knows what's going on with Rachel, this is the book that only you could write. So when I say this is your big book, I don't mean, you know, that this is going to be I'm sorry, I don't actually mean that 200 years from now, people will be passing this around.
Exactly.
What I mean is that this is you. This is, and it's you. All of your books are you, but this was really you in a way that felt downright magical to me. And it's a magical book. So can you tell us a little bit about Beatrix Holland? And I will also say that even before I read it, that you had me at the premise. So give us that.
Well, I don't know how to talk about it now that you've talked me up so well, but thank you. Thank you for, you know, being honestly an ideal reader for this book. The Seven Miracles of Beatrix Holland is about a woman who is pragmatic and sensible and doesn't believe in, you know, mumbo jumbo, not really worried about that kind of thing. But she is told by a psychic that she will experience seven miracles and then she will die. And it, whatever, that's not a big deal. It doesn't bother her because none of it is true. She doesn't believe it. And then miracles start to occur. Things that even she cannot say are not miracles. And so therefore, maybe what about that death thing that's going to be preying on her mind? That's what the book is about.
We're on an island and there's family secrets being revealed, and they're amazing family secrets that I think many of us would, they're kind of awful. And I've talked to some people and some people would be thrilled by them and some wouldn't. it just kind of keeps giving and giving and giving. And it's funny because you say I'm the ideal reader, and actually, I don't know that I necessarily would be.
Oh, that's even better.
Except if somebody else had written this, I would not be the ideal reader. And I don't think that's because I know you. I think it's because of the way that you wrote that. And when I say I wouldn't be the ideal reader, I am getting a little tired of books that are giving me certain specific elements that are very trendy right now and that people feel obliged to give me. And, you know, you've got LGBTQ characters in this, but also you have LGBTQ characters in your life. You are yourself such a character.
Yes, my wife is one of them over in the other room.
And this isn't me saying I will only read books about queer people by queer authors. No, no, no. It's that these are the elements of this book that sort of fall into that are just there because that's your life and what you see. And it just is perfectly natural. And of course, you have a lot of, and it's in sort of the same way that, of course, there's a lot of witchiness and spirituality because it's part of you and part of who you are. Yeah. So it reads as authentic.
That's such a huge compliment. I wrote this book to please myself.
That's my next question. Don't make me interrupt you. That was my question. What was your intention? What did you set out to do with this book?
So this is my sixth genre, and I've been published for 15 years, and this is my 26th or 27th book. I can't remember. Maybe more. I have a list somewhere. And I have always thought about, you know, the market and what people want to read and what people want to hear. As, you know, as you know this, you've been doing the same thing a long time.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with writing to market, around market. Exactly. But in this case, I wanted to write a book and I wanted to have fun. And to be honest, I talk about this regularly, is that I was going to self-publish it. I didn't even want to deal with my agent coming back and saying, oh, you should edit it this way, or, you know, that this or that editor doesn't want it, or they wanted to change in some way. I wanted to write a series of about found family. And I did the Jennifer Lynn Barnes thing, Theodore Taylor, where I just made the list of everything I love the most. You know, I love witchy stuff. I love practical magic. I love sisters. I love twins separated at birth. Why wouldn't I? I love grumpy older women and fireflies and all of the things that I love the most. And I wrote that book, and it was one of the fastest books I've ever written. And not because I was rushing, just because it came easily. I was following my heart and following my gut, and I was also following my tarot cards. When I would get stuck, I would just pull a tarot card and see what it did with my subconscious and move me forward. And it was just play. And then I revised it quickly. I hired my favorite editor, edited it, got it copy edited. And then I decided, oh gosh, I don't think I want to do a whole series. And I'm not sure if I want to self-publish because that's a lot of work. So I'll just let my agent have it. And to see if she could sell it. And she said, okay, I'll take a look at it and see if I could sell it. And then it sold at auction because it was, surprising. There's no because. There's never because in publishing.
Exactly.
So it happened to go this way. And of course, a lot of it is luck. Cozy queer fantasy is, you know, on an upswing right now. But that was a couple of years ago. It took a couple of years for it to come out.
What do you love most? What do you love most about this book and the experience?
The thing I love most about the whole experience is that it has spoiled me for any other kind of writing, I think, now, which may be a good or a bad thing. Ask me in a few years. But I kind of refuse now to write a book that I don't desperately want to write, that I can't stop thinking of. Because I've written a lot of books that I love, but they were, you know what, they were my job. They were the book I sold, and now I will write the book that I sold, and now I will do what the contract says. And I don't want to do that anymore. I just want to write the books that grab me and fascinate me and keep me in their thrall. And what that means is that I have to, you know, focus on other ways to bring in money and to support. And really, I'm supporting this writing passion with things like teaching and with, you know, old backlist books. But I'm not sure if I can go back. I don't want to be a workaday writer writing to a contract that I don't maybe love as much as other contracts I've had, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's spoiled me a little bit that way.
So, are there other ways that this book feels bigger than things that you have written before? And this is, again, we're not denigrating our old work. We're not.
Everybody wants to do this,
right?
I think that for me, it's always been a goal that for every book that I write, it needs to be me playing bigger. It needs to be me playing truer, more free. And in this book, it's only recently come up in my consciousness that I think that I needed to leave the United States and move around the world to New Zealand. And one of the reasons we left the States was because we were scared of the way LGBTQ rights are trending. There's 867 pieces of legislation that are anti-LGBTQ on the dockets right now in the United States, and that's up by like 700% in the last 4 years, and it's terrifying. But it didn't strike me until recently that this is my first novel that has a queer love story. It's not a romance, but there's a queer love story inside it, and I finally perhaps felt safe enough to do that. You know, because when I came into the industry, I came in writing straight romances because that's what would sell. And when I would ask to write other things, that was turned down by traditional publishing because they thought it wouldn't sell. And then, you know, obviously self-publishers came along and said, oh, there is a market. Wow. Look who wants to read these books. But and so it was me kind of exposing myself in that way, and also me exposing myself in the way that Beatrix does, is that I also just want to believe in magic. I want to believe in things out there that I can't explain, that are bigger than me, that I don't actually need a name for or to understand. Because if I could understand something that is that big, something that is powering the universes, I can't be expected to understand that. But can I engage with it? Can I play with it in the exact same way that Beatrix does? I think the answer is yes. And I did. When I would pull the tarot cards to help me write the next chapter if I got stuck, it was an actual process of engaging with a larger thing, saying, I don't know how to write this book. Help me write this book. Asking for help in writing this book from whatever is out there. I don't have big ideas about it. But yeah, so it was scary. And maybe that's why I originally wanted to self-publish it, because then it felt like I could keep total control of
sure.
it if I did that.
Of course, you could keep anyone who wouldn't like it from reading it then.
Well, I don't know how
yeah,
I do that.
Okay.
I would love to know.
So maybe not so much. But no, I get it. It must have felt less vulnerable. So I was going to ask you next what was hard about it. And I guess is that what was hard? But maybe something else was.
Let's see. What was that? So that was hard, being that honest and vulnerable. And you know how when we write our novels, the thing that we want to do is be as truthful as possible. Even though we are just making up a pack of lies, it feels more true often than even memoir can when we're doing this. What else felt hard? Not much felt hard about this book. And I have had books that I have struggled with, like I am wrestling muddy alligators for decades at a time. It feels like that's what those books feel like. And there's nothing wrong with those books. They were just, you know, where I was at the moment. But this book, it's one of those gift books. It just, I must have struggled. And I do not remember, I honestly do not remember struggling.
Well,
I just remember it being joy.
All of us. I wish that journey for all of us.
Yeah.
As usual, I struggle whenever I get copy edits back. When I get copy edits back, I realize I don't know how to write a sentence.
So if any of our listeners are sort of trying to find within themselves the freedom to write what they really want to write and maybe can't even figure out what the heck that would be, what would you say to them? Asking for a friend.
I would encourage them to do one of those id lists, to sit down and write a list of the thing that if you saw that something about it was on the box of the video cassette at the video rental store, because that's how old I am. If you saw that listed on there, would you pick it up and rent the movie? Write down all of the things that you love the most and then actually use it as an exercise in creativity within constraints. How many of those things can you actually shove in there? Can you get them? Can you get them all in there? The other thing I like to ask myself when this question comes up is, if I am alone, well, it doesn't actually matter if I'm alone or not, but if I walk into the bookstore, any bookstore, and I reject any shoulds, you know, should I look for that cookbook I was thinking about, or should I look for that new nonfiction I heard about on the podcast? If I'm released of all shoulds, where will I want to, and say somebody tells me you can only look at one section of the store today. What is the section of the store that I will go stand in front of and pull books off the shelf and look at? And perhaps that is a clue as to where you should be writing.
And how about freeing yourself up to actually do it? We can't all move to New Zealand, Rachel.
Freeing yourself up, do you mean to write the book? Mm-hmm. To write that book?
To write that book. I don't, you know, most of our listeners aren't, you know, we tend to be a podcast for professionals or people that are yep, playing yep. professional. So, yep. you know, these aren't people who can't put their butt in the chair, but to be vulnerable and admit that you want to go bigger and then do it, that's a different question. Got any advice for that?
I do like to think of Stephen Pressfield's advice from his book, The War of Art, where he talks about resistance with the capital R. And the place where you feel the most resistance, that's your compass. That is pointing north to what you are meant to do. And a lot of times when we think about these bigger stories that we may want to write someday, the someday, right? When I get there, I'll write it someday. That you've already got this compass pointing you there, and it is terrifying. And the fear of how can I do that now is maybe the thing that says that you do not need to put aside the fourth book in the series that you're writing and that you need to finish before you write this next series. You can do that. But maybe listening to that resistance, listening to that fear, and dedicating 15 minutes three times a week to playing with the idea of this book, if you were to start to write it anytime in the future, you can at least be courting it and flirting with it, making it know that you are going to be available to write that book of your heart. Because we all need that. We all need that. We also need to pay the bills and do the professional writing and do all that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we can.
We gotta try to do the biggest things we can. All right. Well, that's a great place to lead into my next question, which is, what have you read recently where you really thought the writer was playing big?
Can I give you two?
Of course.
Okay. The first one, and strangely, these are both nonfiction. So make of that what you will. But Careless People, A Cautionary Tale of Power, Greed, and Lost Idealism by Sarah Wynne Williams, who is a Kiwi. Have you heard of this one?
Oh, yeah. This is the Facebook book. The Facebook book. We moved fast and we did indeed break things.
We did move fast. We broke things. And Sarah has a uniquely Kiwi sense when she's looking at them, because she goes in and she's really watching it all happen. And I don't care about Facebook. I don't actually engage with all of the stuff that's said about it. And this book is written, basically, it felt like a thriller. It was, I couldn't put it down. And she was fearless. The things that she said, no wonder Zuckerberg wanted to silence it. He looks like a moron. And she was absolutely fearless. And it was one of those schadenfreude, why am I reading this? Why can't I put this down? But I can't put it down. And I think it was because of her bravery.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it for that. And then the other one I want to tell you about is kind of on the flip side. And you may not have heard about this one. It's called This Is Not a Book About Benedict Cumberbatch.
Not only have I heard about this one, it's entirely possible that I sent it to you.
Really?
I love this book. All right, go on.
The subtitle is The Joy of Loving Something, Anything, Like Your Life Depends on It by Tabitha Carvin. Oh my God, isn't it brilliant? She writes about how, yes, she does love Benedict Cumberbatch, who I'd really never considered
very much in my life. No, I couldn't pick him out of a lineup of youthful-ish,
yeah,
British-ish, yeah, actor-ish.
And she loves him, no joke, loves him. And the whole book is about recovering from any shame around loving the thing that you were put on this earth to freaking love with your whole heart, no matter what anybody says. And I really think that Benedict Cumberbatch is a really great thing to tie this whole book to.
It had to be something like that. Because if it was like knitting... I mean, okay,
right, exactly.
That's fine, honey.
Who cares?
You know, like, can love the, your knitting.
Exactly.
And, you know, it also
is. This is not a book about yogurt. Who cares, you know? But Benedict Cumberbatch is funny to say. He's actually kind of funny to look at when you do look at him, when you do look him up. And it's so evocative. And it is something that people would snicker at.
Yeah.
Right?
People still, would snicker. It's like she snickers at herself. But also she's like, okay, why? Why is that, you know, would it be, if I were super obsessed with the stats of some obscure baseball player, no one would mock that. If
that
I wanted to watch every football game played by, you know.
That blew my mind when she said that. Of course. So, and she goes deep. She's so brave. She plays big. She goes into what it means. How does it affect her husband? What does she think about how it affects her husband? Like, she goes all of the places. I bet you
Why
did tell me about
ask
it. And I'm
this?
So glad that yeah. you did.
I keep extra yes. copies to force people to read. I tie people up in, like, you know, parts of my house and force them. No, I don't really do that.
I love that. And what do those all have in common? I think that both those books have in common is these women who at any point, anybody in the whole world could have told them, that's not really a good idea to write a book about
that.
Yeah,
no, that's exactly right.
And it would have been
right.
true.
Yeah, it would have been true. It would have been excellent advice.
Excellent advice not to write that
really,
book.
Really, you but should not admit that you love Benedict. Or really, I mean, you're never going to work in this town again, man.
You're never going to work in this town again. And during the whole book of Careless People, she's talking about being inside. She is inside the beast that is doing the damage. And that's brave, too. And I don't think Seven Miracles is as brave as those books. But there was bravery and resistance around moving toward really putting yourself on display.
Run towards the fear.
And that's what we writers do.
That's
our run towards the fear. Even if you can only give it 15 minutes a day or so, three times a week, that's enough.
Fine, scooch.
That's enough to tell your bravery it should come back more. Yeah, scooch. Scooch toward bravery.
Scooch towards, scooch towards
little scooches.
Edge towards the fear. Tiptoe.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that you're doing this series.
We love it, too. So, yeah, it's going great. Well, again... Thank you. I was really excited to talk to you about this book. I was really excited to read this book. I enjoyed the heck out of it. And I think, listeners, that you would too. You should absolutely check it out, as well as all the rest of Rachel's work. Links, of course, as always, in the show notes. And follow Rachel in all the places. Although, to me, the best thing to do is to go and listen to the Ink in Your Veins podcast. Because obviously, people, you're a podcast listener. You wouldn't be here. Where do you most like to be followed, Rachel?
At Ink in Your Veins or on rachelherron.com/write if you are a writer and want to get on the writing encouragement list. But I just want to thank you for doing this amazing show and for having me. I feel very, very honored to be here.
Well, thank
truly. So.
Thank you. All right. And as we say in every episode, until next week, kids, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.